built for yachts that demand more. At Indiantown Marine Center, we provide the space, capability, and support needed for efficient yacht service projects. With 250-ton and 100-ton travel lifts, expansive workspace, 2,800 feet of dockage, and a skilled contractor base, our 40-acre facility makes yacht projects easier from start to finish. Located nearly 30 miles inland, owners and captains have the flexibility to manage maintenance, upgrades, and major refits on their terms. Indiantown Marine Center, built for your project. Visit IndiantownMarineCenterFL.com.
Good morning. The U.S. refit industry has the talent, the infrastructure, and the ambition. Now it needs alignment. I'm Maria, and this is American Refit. First off, I want to say a huge thank you to the Safe Harbor Jaffa for having us here this morning. And thank you to my two guests, Rob LeKing and Luke Hammett. Rob, if you could give us a little background, your professional career in maritime industry.
So my career goes back 40-something years, mostly in the shipyard aspect of it all. So on the technical side, ship owners representation, built a few shipyards, and I've managed some major projects for those yards at the same time. I had no onboard experience, but I come from a perspective that is somewhat unique.
You started out being your dad's sick garden.
I started out at 6 years old, picking up blown lads and males in my father's shipyard. Yes. So I was inducted into the industry very early.
Excellent. Yep. Thank you. And Luke, how about you?
I am what I like to call a recovering yacht captain. I've been in the industry for about the last 23 years. Same deal. Grew up around boats and sailboats. And the last 23 years on super yachts captaining. I also have a unique perspective, having spent majority of the career based in and out of US. And now my focus is on the businesses that are actually helping the yachts and the industry improve and just kind of raise the bar, which is why I wanted to be part of this chat.
Thank you. Fantastic. Let's clarify how a well-defined plan, accountability, and reporting follows the initial phases in the project development.
So the word oversight is an all-encompassing catch-all phrase because there's so many layers of oversight in terms of actual the planning, the production, counting, QAQC. There's so many different aspects of what oversight is, of who holds that responsibility. If you imagine that you're the conductor of an orchestra, you are not only guiding that orchestra, but you're also playing a few instruments, but you also know how everybody else needs to play their instrument at the same time. So you are a larger conductor when you're at the top of that project food chain. In terms of what the oversight should be, it is a case-by-case basis because of the skill sets that you're working with and the partners that you have. For me, a well-established team of responsibility and delegation of that responsibility and responsiveness to that responsibility, that's absolutely the key to success.
I feel that everybody has to have that defined role. So whether it's an audit, reporting at the end, or even a spill variation, we need to know where something went wrong so that we can fix it quickly and provide accountability and transparency back to the owner when the project wraps up.
Absolutely.
Like, what's your take on that initial oversight leading into project development with that end goal of a positive execution?
More than anything, it's just the expectation from all parties. I think it's not really a narrative because everything's financially driven, but when you have so many vendors and whether it's the captain, the owner, the management company, vendors themselves, the project manager, whatever that ends up being, everybody needs to be aiming towards the same direction. And it tends to end up happening that a vendor will have its own idea or a shipyard will have its own idea, but it doesn't end up working towards the expectation of the owner or the captain. So it's almost as though, perspective-wise, the business needs to be knowing what they're supposed to be doing. The vendors do, but every, like you said, the maestro needs to be sitting there, but that we're missing that layer where everybody's being held to the same standard.
Yep.
So it's 60 together or fail apart. So who's who on the team and why it's so important when managing a refit? It would always come back to that same point. And it's the discovery and the pre-planning periods that lay out what a refit should look like. It always goes back to that. There's no way around it. So heading into a refit, it can't be last minute, whether it's a maintenance period, special survey. Without that planning, the budget goes sideways and the timelines aren't followed and have an unhappy owner. Can you give me some examples of how or a last minute fix a project went well when you're brought in to save the day?
It invariably happens in different scales. For all of the planning, you're either planning or you're not planning. So pre-planning is a little bit of a weird word. So you're developing a scope. You have expectations for that scope, whether it's time, workflow, budget. Something's going to bubble up. There's always going to be scope growth. Nobody comes in and knows exactly what's going to happen. There's always something that comes up. There are times when we have jumped in when an owner's contractor has failed to show up or scope becomes more than they're capable of handling. We have to come in and either augment their labor force or take over a project for them. That has certainly happened. I've had yachts coming where captain doesn't really know what a 10-year survey is. And as a shipyard, there is a separation between the shipyard and the classesar. And the connection is supposed to be the belt. More than once, I've had to actually run the refit or the 10-year survey on behalf of the captain just to, you know, it gets them done. Captain's certainly free school of it all. Like, every time you have to make an argument, and if the captain doesn't know what that argument is, and you do, you make that argument for whether it's pitting a water tank that, no, you don't need to cut out shell plate. This can be spot welded or browned and then encoded again. You can make those sort of arguments. So there have been a number of times that over the course of the career, whether it's Talents commercial ships or yachts, he had to come in, either correct the record, write a repair plan so the boat can get out and make things right. And that's part of what get paid to do. Well, you set a level of BR as project managers. Your job is then pave the way, make the bore smooth.
I'm not saying to be trying to get away with anything that is untoward or bad.
You never do.
But there are times when insurance get it wrong.
Coast Guard gets it wrong. Class gets it wrong. You just have to make a logical argument. That's really what I'm actually pretty good at that. I found myself following you to that clinker spot.
And that's all about the teamwork that goes on within that project.
Yeah. Making work for the experience.
Absolutely. Luke, how about you? What miners' adverse situation have you survived?
I'm still here, but that's a positive one. I think that from an expectation standpoint, the owners, even the captains to it, but captains more so, aren't educated in refit because you don't get the exposure. Perfect example of a 10-year, 15-5 recertification, whatever it ends up being. There's only so many instances in your career that you would have had exposure to that. But then you go from the yard side of it, and it's multiples, theoretically, of the same environment, the same issues on a repeat adultment. Where the disconnects come in from a pre-planning side is the owner's expectation of the way the boat should be run. Hey, I used to do this before I did this, or little Jimmy's got a birthday party. We need to be in St. Bart's for such and such, right? You need to do this or extend this, or that was too much.
Mm-hmm.
So we're missing that gap of being able to infer that this has to be done at a certain time, that there's going to be a price line, and that's, you know, that just the way the market is at the moment, or there's a way to back up the pricing side of it. But then what's not to say that this is the main reason, but because the expectations aren't being met from all sides. I personally had that instance where I don't like going with some shipyards, or I don't like going to certain areas or using certain vendors because of bad experiences. And I think the driving force ends up being that if you know that you can go somewhere and you're going to get the outcome that you want, and the owner's going to get the outcome that they want, and it's going to be at a price that everybody believes is fair, that's where we start winning. But the moment that we all start pointing fingers at each other, which inevitably happens when it's like all of a sudden, you know, you've got to pull the rabbit out of the hat, everybody's going to start doing this. And then everybody leaves unhappy. So pre-planning. And for me, more than anything else, it's just going to be educating people again. And, you know, someone's going to have to turn around and, you know, what they say, and sometimes you just got to call the baby ugly.
So another point for us to discuss today is you cannot control what you cannot measure. Whether it's using a platform, a blue folder, pinpoint, starting with that, right down to a Excel sheet, the good old trusty Excel sheets that we all love. But without measuring and aligning the project management team, we'd already be off to a bad start. So like you said, the expectations, having those conversations with the planning team, the naval architect, the management company, everybody does have to be on the same page. And I think that's what we want to put out there to the industry and to owners with this podcast, is that we are working towards unity and alignment to work as a system together to bring Hagaptic Yard Period back to the US.
So there needs to be a baseline.
Exactly.
That's all it's, you know, there needs to be something there that everybody can refer back to and say, hey, you're going to come into the yard, we're going to hold you to this baseline. Or if we're coming into the yard, we're going to hold the yard to the baseline. A little contracts is in the same breath. There needs to be accountability. No. Right now we're shopping generators. We're 20 weeks out. You have to plan. That's the baseline's kind of being set.
Yep. Well, that is what we're doing with the American Refit Leadership Council that we are on board with. We are going to set the standard for the industry. We are building processes and procedures together in this group of experts, business owners, legal counsel to set that standard. I like the term, there's more than one way to skin a cat, but scope of work and accountability for all parties is there's only one way for us to authorize, verify, and deliver. So the industry would all agree, it all keeps coming back to the same point. We all have to be on the same page.
Gary? Gone are the days of an owner saying, my boat needs repair, just do it. That doesn't exist anymore. Historically, the industry has taken advantage of that mindset and is swung the opportunity to give it. Bad actors, either on a shipyard contractor or even cool-out. So the oversight that comes in, coming back first question, is, you know, management company, of course, crew. There seems to be an unfortunate adversarial relationship between boat and shipyard, where all possible scope is not disclosed in advance, whether that gets turned on or not. Shipyards, they don't have unlimited capacity. So time extensions impact shipyard schedule and upon a submit to the client behind, because it's in that critical position. And unfortunately, that what we see is boats are arriving. The scope of work has been disclosed to the shipyard, and then engineering, interior, and deck have their own list. And that list is not something that's going to be done by crew. No, we're a very good contractor for this. We're bringing somebody for that. At that point, you've got timelines that are crossing over or stepping on each other. And that's where the cat gets mangled, not skin. And that is a real, that is a real problem. Pricing from a shipyard who are just, you know, obviously trying to do their best and service the customer. Nobody wants an RDR. Nobody wants an adversary relationship to run a yard grave. Nobody going in there and looking for a fight, right?
But most, I think everything that you're saying is correct. And it all comes back to no independent project manager or someone hold that's, it's the layer above.
Yes.
That can be accountable for all parties that can see all things. Yes, because inevitably, you know, from the yard will do the best that they can to its ability.
Mm-hmm.
The boat's going to be more likely than not going to be less experienced in every element of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that all they're doing is looking at price and time.
Yep.
By courtesy of pre-planning, right, for no planning, like you just said, timelines start getting crossed and now you've got vendors sitting on top of vendors. It works out, get it done.
And even for the vendor, if they have a project scheduled and that timeline is pushed, what about their bottom line? You know, they have to survive shoreside, follow a schedule that their deposits get eaten up with their day-to-day operations. So even the vendors, they get kicks in the teeth at the end, but the pressure's put on them just as much as the yard needs to get that OFAC in the water. So it's, again, all of us pulling together to...
Everything comes down to expectation price. You know, you had all these smaller vendors. You've seen it. Lauderdale's definitely growing up over the years. And it's been smaller vendors and it used to be downtime over the summers. You could relax and then you may work. Now it's just like 24/7 prayer. So that's all over the place. Right. So the standard of the business is the expectation there has already changed. The money's still there and it's available to people as long as the output was there. Now we've got this, we're in this sort of stage of disconnect where you've got so many people that have sprung off willing to do anything and everything in bad actors. Then you've got the legacy guys that are sitting there doing what they can. Everybody's competing on price again.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're sitting in this spot where there's a lack of knowledge base and there's that baseline isn't there. So everybody's coming in and it's like, well, he's the cheapest, I'm going to use him. And you learn, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's tough to put a tier one contractor next to a tier three contractor. A, it breeds a little bit of bad blood and resentment in variable, but having two different types of contractors, when I say types, I mean quality next to each other based on price, you are going to have the tier three guy is going to have an impact on the tier one guy, which is ultimately going to roll up to the boat, which is going to land on the refit manager's table and something that you need to explain to capping now here in Alden. The management, well, I'm not advocating that every tier one contractor should be the old ones that exist, but you really have to watch out for the ingredients that you're making out of this. As you put a substandard person next to you and somebody of high quality, there's going to be an issue. There's definitely going to be an issue. You got an inexpensive teak deck guy working next to a very expensive painter. Those two skill sets do not mix. They absolutely do not mix. And one guy's going to contaminate the other guy's work. Who's responsible for that? Who chose? That's where planning makes a difference. That's where having qualified top tier refit managers to select contractors and not based on money is always an issue, right? Well, runs on money, but selecting the team, selecting that orchestra makes a difference. You got one guy that likes to play out of tune, your music's not going to be very good.
Well, I think the argument's coming back down to value versus the physical dollar amount.
Yep.
Ultimately.
Yep.
Like we're sitting there arguing over pennies and then we're losing time in the process. Like, you know, to done and save myself 7,000 or 12,000 on a job.
Mm-hmm.
Being there for an additional 5 weeks because said vendor doesn't turn up or said B,
don't issue our facility for hearing.
Oh. Yeah, you're the wrong effect for everything, or just a baseline mistake, or inevitably, sorry, I can't make it today. No good. You know, Bog spoke over there on that guy and something else that popped up. I'm going to go hit them first.
Yep. The front tower didn't mess up a day.
No.
And that's going back to some old school project managers that pine through quotations and estimates. And it seems so labor intensive, but that is the only way you are going to find those extra expenses. Then you apply that to the timeline across the vendors to then present to the owner. How the owner's team has to receive this information, though. They need to understand what bringing this to you to solve your issue. You want your boat fixed, extended, painted, whatever the project is. We are here to bring a positive outcome to you. And it looks, the explanation is long to get to the end, shorter, if that made sense.
Well, it's like you don't get your GP to do brain surgery. Right. It's counterintuitive. You've got someone that does the same thing over and over again, and that touches on all those, you know, small elements of one little knife move this way versus another. It's like you're touching hundreds of vendors.
Yep.
You're seeing all these little issues, custom issues, like you come into the yard, there's no way you're going to know what you're going to get. You know,
yep,
there's going to be elements that are not known. This, that one system, profession, oversight to go look over your boat is almost like insurance that you will get out on budget, you get out on time.
Yep. Look, one thing I lament, the fact that, and this goes back, this is nothing new, this goes back years and years. It seems that no two shipyards or contractors estimate up quote the same way. And from a project management perspective, you're taking in multiple bids.
Yeah.
And this is apples, this is oranges, and this is pears. They're all free, you know? But trying to get them into a system for a real comparison, it was always difficult for me back in the day. We would write very specific requests. You know, we write specification and it would say, this is exactly how the work is going to go. This is exactly how we want you to price it. And this is the materials, this is the man hours, this is the labor rate, here's your total. And then we just get, no, here's just the total. Nobody would quote as same way, right? Or I've included something here, but not here, or I've excluded something here. If you look at the auto industry, the service industry, when you go repair for something in your vehicle, 9 times out of 10, here's the parts, here's the labor, all bits of Ford. And I understand why it works that way, the auto industry, because most cars are built exactly the same on the assembly line. No boats are. It's very difficult for people like Luke Cole and the top tier refit managers to take this information and correlate it into, here's one document that is totally inclusive. There's always an asterisk. There's always a caveat. There's always an exception or inclusion that doesn't.
You think that one, you have to know what that exclusion or that inclusion means.
Right. And what the implications of that are. That's where the refit manager really earns the money. And that's hopefully long before the boat shows up in the yard. Right. Should be long before a boat shows up in the yard. That's really tough to do.
You're sitting there looking at something, you've gone, what have I missed?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're sort of giving yourself a 20% allowance and you're like, the recall, this was the number.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the hardest part. You could turn around to someone and go, hey, we're at, you know, 3 million.
Right.
But we don't know if that's the number or not.
As a captain, when you answer directly to the owner, how difficult is that when the project manager didn't catch something to his fault or not? Maybe it was just a variable that changed how the scope works. But when you were a captain, how did you navigate those conversations with an owner when something went awry?
Honestly, you're giving them bad examples as the baseline. Hey, this happened because of this. You know, we misjudged this one because this one, this vendor messed up. this vendor in 100% over because they were aware of the scope of work.
Mm-hmm.
Inevitably, it was because it's lack of pre-planning, typically. Lack of putting, you know, 2-3 weeks in to understand the implications of, you know, 4-3 month, 4 month, 5 month, 6 month yard period and what it really meant. Like, I've had a 15-year cancel on me, trying to revive it 6 weeks prior to then go and try and reveal out $5 million worth of work. And then that number changed in the middle of. It's hard because there's no one to advocate to something like this. There's no one advocating on behalf of all the vendors and shipyards to say that it's a standardized version of the way things are going to be exactly or build. Everybody's singing their own tune. You know, you go anywhere, if you get 10 artists kind of sing rock and pop and country, it sounds whack. It's horrible.
Yep.
You might like that little bit for that one instance, but when you start, you know that you need to go into a shipyard, you know you need to go plan for something. If there is that baseline, which is obviously what we're shooting for here, that you can walk in it, everybody's singing the same way in shooting. There's still only one person that's going to be, but everyone wants to be soulless to something.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. It's hard.
Do you feel, Rob, that up here in the Treasure Coast, Stuart Fort Pierce area, you have the foundation to build out projects with a bit of a some fresh air, so to speak? It's a fire, a cure,
mm-hmm.
and you can set the tone for a project. You have a handle on it because it's not oversaturated at this time?
So the Treasure Coast is a growing market. There is certainly demand and pressure from what's happening in Miami, Palm Beach, and Broward County. There's a lack of capacity here in terms of haul out facilities at scale. Obviously, a director up in Fort Pierce, which can take to really big boats. Everybody else is sort of in that, you know, 120 and then down range. There is a lot of interest in what's happening here because there's not enough work for all of the casting characters that are in Lauderdale now. They all just can't move up. They would all starve. So what the Marine Industries Association Treasure Coast is doing is inviting the top tier guys and girls up to this region. Come explore it. Come see what it is. There is fertile ground here, but is only for select. If you don't want to be in the cacophony of what is Lauderdale, this is as good a place to be as any. It's, you know, there's a lot of deal approximate. You're looking for parts, you can get there pretty easily. There may be a Brightline station here in Stuart someday soon. If not here, it'd be in Fort Pierce. So there'll be a Brightline stop. Makes it easier for contractors and employees to get up to the Treasure Coast. There are certain industrial development projects on the books that are going to expand the Shadir capabilities here. I think Director is still going to remain the largest capacity just because it's a deep water port with no restrictions. Here in Stuart and Martin County, there are tractor restrictions and height restrictions to get to where you need to be. But this is where the industry is going to try to move. And I think that is, it's watchable. It's where the population is really. Traffic here is much less, gas is much less, food is less expensive. You don't spend all your days of sitting in traffic, just trying to rule a couple of miles. It's a beautiful place to be, and it's a friendly business environment. So I think that this region is going to continue to see its expansion. We're not going to have a Lauderdale Marine Center here. We're not going to have a Bradford Marine here. The directory is here. And the Indiantown Marine Centers, so at the end, their large expansion, but there's not going to be many shipyards side by side. And that's going to keep the contractors not away. It's going to keep them, well, there's only going to be a certain amount of work for those people just because of the haul at the cities there. But this is a great place to live and work.
And you're building that baseline.
We're building the baseline, Well, membership is growing and there are privates on the horizon. And it will definitely be a different flavor to what happens in Lauderdale. But you know, we pulled off some pretty amazing things. There's been 4 beers.
And I know the refit topic and the maritime industry across the U.S., this is all of us pulling this idea of alignment and unity together. There's Seattle, San Diego, there's Tampa Ship. But I know, and I'm grateful that you and Dan Romich show up at events in Fort Lauderdale and Palm Beach consistently. So I know that you're here to support the growth of the refit.
Dan and I are members of most of the groups that are in Lauderdale. We're advocating for the marine industry as the marine industry. Yes, this is our region, but we work really closely with MIASF and Lorraine Nations. And you know, we are very active in the Marine Industry Association. Four Islands is a statewide organization. And you know, we're small business members, Treasure Coast Builders or Manufacturers Association. We're in so many groups, the business development boards, the economic development councils. We're in so many groups. It's all about growing the marine industry as a whole, because you know, the name of the group is not the Broward County Refitization Council. Wherever it's going to happen, America needs the change. It needs the guidance. It needs the additional direction. Yes, this is, we're 4 counties here and we're a fairly large region and we're open for business.
And Luke, I know that with your company, Seek Standards, you're bringing your knowledge or skill set to business owners to allow them to scale, but to show them how to operate outside of themselves, almost how to lay out the framework to step away and let the team build that. And that aligns with what we're doing in project management with running a vessel as a captain, right?
It's mostly being obviously being the core avatar for all businesses in yachting, and having spent so much money, I've always had this feeling, you know, I step into a business, I don't get a quote, I don't get a call back, that my expectations are not being met. And coming from an industry where you cater to such a small niche, the people that have such high standards, we're expected to meet that standard for them, that the industry isn't meeting us where we need it to be from a boat standpoint. And I realize everything we do on a day-to-day basis is hospitality. It's people to people. So I wanted to be able to have what we offer an experience on boats to give it to the businesses that are open to it so that they can then share it with their clients. So we're all kind of at this spot, you know, it needs to be fair if you're going to use the F word. So from the business standpoint, I realized that everybody got in the business to sell, to solve a problem, and typically they can do it well, but the business of business is not something that people were, that they're in it by mistake, so to speak. So any of the helping them with the foundational elements, but of also helping them get their business to a point where it's transferable. So that's there if something, they get sick or if something happens to them, they can actually step aside and the business will run without them. So it's obviously not for everybody. For people that are kind of, that do want to raise the bar in their business and they want some help with it, that's where seeing the most success with people. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Now,
good stuff.
Makes me feel good too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see that. Well, from an operational side and standards, I can't think of two better guys to have this discussion with this morning. I want to thank everybody for joining us. And again, thank you, Safe Harbor, Harborage Yacht Club. This has been amazing. And that's it. Maria, signing off.
Refitting, building, or managing a yacht, there is no room for costly mistakes, delays, budget overruns, poor coordination. Without careful pre-planning and experienced oversight, shipyard projects and vessel operations can quickly unravel. Maritime Project Solutions handles it all. From refits and new builds to day-to-day operations, logistics, and administration, we keep your project on schedule, on budget, and your yacht performing exactly as it should. Independent, experienced, on your side. Visit mpsolutions913.com to get started. Maritime Project Solutions, done right the first time.